For WFHB in Bloomington, this is Hereabouts,
a collaboration with the IU Asian Culture Center.
Hello, everyone. Thanks for being with us on Hereabouts today. I'm your host for today, Anushka, and I'm a PhD student in the English department, just starting on my fourth year, which is, of course, dissertation year. So the idea of commitments and everything I sign on to is really weighing on my mind, which is why the episode for today is called Commitments. And we're interpreting that word a little loosely, which is the various things that make a claim on our time and the various things that we want to give to. So, and when those of us who are politically conscious and who want to be a part of activist culture somewhere are wondering how to divide our time, commitments often becomes this big thing that we have to think about, right? How much time do we have? What are all the ways in which we want to divide it? What are the various things in conflict with each other? So here to help me think through some of these pressing questions is Pallavi, another PhD student from the media school and in her fifth year. So Pallavi, we're hoping that, you know, I don't know if we can resolve any crises by the end of today, but I'm hoping that the idea of commitments is going to seem a little less scary after we've been able to talk about this.
Or perhaps we can at least agree that it is scary and commiserate.
Right, for sure. But of course, all of this is with activism in mind, right? Because activism is one of those things that no one really asks us to do, but you know, we feel a pull towards it anyway. Yes. And even when you think you can step away, something in the world happens that pushes you right back. But also, I think for some of us for whom it isn't our everyday existence, right, it's always this question of like divided loyalties, right? Mm-hmm. So before you came to Bloomington, were you involved in activist culture?
A little bit. So I came to Bloomington from India in 2015. Fall 2015 is when I started my PhD, and I was actually a lecturer in a media, it's a journalism school really, in South India. It's in a small university town called Manipal. And it's, South Karnataka has been a hotbed of a lot of Hindu fundamentalist activity over the last decade or so. So there's been a lot of activism that's happened, particularly on feminist issues, because women who go out and drink were targeted at one point, and that's, you know, they were being attacked in pubs and other places by sort of these goons, for lack of a better word. And so I used to get involved mainly because as a single woman in India who really wanted to have my freedom walking around and being able to participate in any kind of social life, you wanted to be able to do that free of any fear of being policed. So that was when I started getting involved with a sort of anti-communal forum that I was a part of in Manipal for a while, and then that eventually expanded into other things. There was union activity, there was resistance against Islamophobic acts of violence, and ultimately anti-caste activism as well, which kind of flowered also into my research. So it was a very happy marriage of like things that I was being politically involved in, actually feeding into what I wanted to study even in my research. So that was kind of where I came from, even politically speaking, but also in an intellectual way. And so that's how I ended up in the PhD here.
Yeah, that sounds great. And I think it resonates with some of my experiences too. There was this big episode, actually, this brutal kind of assault of this woman in Delhi, if you remember.
Yes.
That was one of big shakeup for me that drew me in. But obviously, once I was involved and I knew I was going to, you know, leave my student activist community behind and come here, it obviously was preying on my mind as to what would happen to that side of my life when I came here.
Yes.
So were you expecting to join activist communities when you came to Bloomington? Did you kind of look up what opportunities there would be? Like, what was your imagination of the future?
So yes and no. I think, you know, Google just gives you weird random things. I'm always aware that activism actually occurs in very local contexts, right? You're part of a local community and you're invested in changing things about that community. So for me, I was very aware that I was coming in as a newbie to Bloomington. I didn't know what local community was like. I figured that it would take me time to sort of get involved with whatever campus. I imagine being a part of, say, international student community. So knowing that international students suffer through certain things and can come together around certain festivals maybe or certain community activities, I imagine being a part of that. But you know, PhD life is very overwhelming. So it was really sort of exhausting. So I was okay not being a part of a very vital activist culture that first year.
Right.
But the second year is when, you know, a certain president got elected in this country in a very weird time. And I kind of got sucked into it pretty soon.
Right.
By the second year, despite not really seeking it out. Inevitably, like you felt like you had to do something.
So hard to predict the timelines.
Yeah.
And since we're talking about commitments, it's one of those things where this idea of pressures that are actually in some ways constructed but feel extremely heavy.
Yes.
But it feels like you're under the scanner in a certain way in grad school, right? So this idea that I owe it to the classroom or I owe it to the professor was also a big deal for me. But part of me was so like, oh, I came all the way here to do this, right? And this desire to be a good student.
Right.
I think that sets another kind of pressure in our head that it's just much more weighty than one might imagine.
Yes.
I guess, did you not find that you were being able to kind of, even if not activism, but what about the international groups that, you know, through cultural activities, did you find that they were not filling that hole?
Yeah, they really were not all that welcoming, actually. One of the things that in some ways I expected was that the Indian student community here would be very much sort of heavily into STEM subjects. Mm-hmm. So, you know, they're the big engineering boys, you know, and I say boys because there are fewer women there. I'm not just trying to generalize us and be very masculinist about this, but it is often dominated by, you know, the informatics departments and Kelly School, literally MBA students were where you'd expect to see Indians. During the initial few months, I tried reaching out to them. I joined the Indian Student Association, which I realized was not actually Indians straight from coming, you know, who were first generation coming in from India, but were actually second generation Indian Americans who've been here for a while. So I didn't mind that actually as much, but it also seemed like they were much more focused on Indian culture and cultural events rather than, say, forging a sense of community over being Indians in America. So that was not what they were focused on. That was a little alienating, and I was fine not finding an Indian community per se. I think the kind of politics that I have anyway, I'm very wary about.
A lot of it is critical of India,
exactly.
Right?
Exactly, and a lot of it is very critical of the Indian government, yeah. And particularly patriarchy in India. So it's, I knew I'd have to be selective if I did have an Indian community here. So I was okay not having that. But I think there were also other things going on. For instance, my department had just actually merged three different schools within one media school. So the journalism and the communication and culture and the media science departments had all joined in. So there was no actual departmental community that I could just fit in.
Right.
And very often there were not that many events back then. So the first year was actually alienating even from a departmental culture way. And I think that was hard as well. My socializing pretty much happened to be just Americans who would go to happy hour to the pub, you know?
Yeah, white Americans.
White
mostly.
Americans for the most part. And it was just, I'm not big on bar hopping.
Yeah.
As it's just not a part of, as much as I was advocating for women to go in and actually have the freedom to go to bars in India, we didn't bar hop.
You also wanted the freedom not to go to
bars.
Yeah,
exactly. It was a little strange. I found a couple of friends within the media school who were like my tight-knit, you know. We could see that we'd be closer, you know? But by the end of the second year, one left, and then last year just the other one as well left. So it's like people have kind of come and gone.
Mm-hmm.
But that first year was definitely hard for all those reasons. Mm-hmm. And I think I had a very solid community in India that I did not appreciate for what they represented. They're comrades, you know, political comrades. They are people who share my sense of passion for social justice. They care about feminist rights. They care about, you know, fighting injustice in local communities. And they're very much against classism and sort of this whole, you know, bougie, you know, the kind of social life that certain people in my generation certainly have no qualms in embracing, you know, like going to malls and shopping and multiplexes and so on. This is very middle class Indian life right now, and that's not what I'm for. So I guess all of those just organically shaped my life, and then coming here and not having even like the bare minimum, you know, semblance of that, not even finding people I could just have great conversations with, even if I didn't bond with them politically or something,
right.
That was hard.
So I think what I'm getting from this is that to be able to jump into activism, you really need that sense of community first, right? Because it sort of is not a coincidence that the isolation that you felt in your first year was also one that held you back from really jumping into activism.
Yes.
And I think you also touched a little bit upon some of the weirdness that I myself have experienced being international student in the US, because on the one hand, you want an India-specific experience. You don't just feel like, you know, woman of color is such a vast phrase. And I think increasingly we're finding that it's just become too much of an empty signifier, right?
And I hate saying that because I know that, I mean, Indiana, IU is a very white campus, right? We hear that enough. And I know that I'm marked as brown. I don't pass for white.
Absolutely.
I don't pass as a local or even as an American. So I feel like I don't want to dismiss what racial politics in this country is like.
Mm-hmm.
But woman of color really does not fit what I identify as. In fact, I very rarely identify as a woman of color, even though...
You identify more as Indian.
I identify as an international student.
Or international,
as not even an immigrant. It's a very weird term
for
a student. I don't know if I intend to immigrate per se. say, depending on what the job situation is, right? I might go back to India. So I feel like saying I'm a temporary visitor to America, you know? And it just does not encompass what
No, and it's I funny am. Because it's also very unromantic in some ways to define yourself by your bureaucratic status rather than by your ethnicity.
I'm an F1 visa holder.
Right. So in that sense, yes, you know, you don't necessarily feel like, as much as we want that cross-ethnic, multiracial solidarity, woman of color doesn't always fit your experience because it's not American. But then, as you were saying, for those who are not first-generation Indians in America, those who've been here a while, for them being sort of critical of the Indian government or responding to every local issue in India isn't so much the first priority. It's through those cultural you know, festivities and bonding that aren't always the way that we want to assert our identity in this country when, you know, our memory of being from India is so fresh in some ways. Right. So it makes sense to me that the elections and Trump in that moment would be what brought you in, because as much as I think we were in denial of our investment in American politics, there's a realness and a sort of kind of visceral quality to things that are happening immediately around you that any politically minded person can't resist.
Right.
So as much as we were trying to say that American politics might not be where our heart lies, I think it kind of became a tipping point that actually drew you in.
It did. And I think at some point, you know, things like, I mean, Trump, you know, had the Muslim ban put into place like within a few weeks of coming into power, right? And I think something about that that struck home very close to heart is we have Muslim international students coming in from places like Turkey and Iran who were directly affected by that, right? You had acts of vandalism across Bloomington and close enough in India. I think there was one in Carmel and I think one more, I want to say Fort, I'm not sure where, but I believe a synagogue was defaced with a swastika, and then there were KKK signs spray painted onto, I think, Bloomington, the trail.
I remember
that. And so we heard all of these incidents, and I think that, you know, as much as I say that I have much lesser investment in American politics, I'm part of a student community that is going to face racist backlash, right? When white supremacists are organizing nationwide, and certainly in a very red state. So I felt like that inevitably was like, okay, I'm here. And even if I'm not the primary vulnerable targets that they're looking for, there are others within my community who will be vulnerable, right? If and when violence were to erupt. So I felt like organizing in solidarity with them, organizing to make sure that we have resources to protect racial minorities, sexual minorities, ethnic minorities, these became important.
I actually felt like the word solidarity was something I really understood at that moment for very similar reasons, because I remember when in the countdown to the election, I remember feeling, I had just arrived. 2016 was my year of coming here. And I remember in the countdown just not being completely able to make sense of what was going on. It was almost like I was in a daze, and because I wasn't really very well versed with local electoral politics here. And I knew it was supposed to be something with very devastating consequences, but I don't think I'd completely grasped it till next morning. I went to class, I had like a 9 a.m. class or something. We were studying modernism, which is like the 20th, you know, first half of the 20th century, Anglo-American literatures, but we were studying specifically those writers who got left out of the usual canon and they're mostly, you know, a black writer, Mexicans. So we already had a class that had a certain unity in terms of their political opinions. And we all came in looking like zombies. I heard my professor curse for the first time. He's the sweetest, mildest mannered person. Yeah, one of my closest friends had to present that morning. And I don't know how she got through it, but she basically kind of burst into tears right after class, and she was talking about remembering all the times that her parents have been beaten up for not being able to speak English, having to revisit those traumatic moments. And I felt like it didn't even matter if I was the most affected or not. I felt I had to be there for them. And I felt that it was an interesting position to occupy, because definitely I did not, you know, feel the kind of onus that white Americans did. So I felt that kinship with them, but I also felt that, okay, as in, you know, Hindu upper caste Indian with certain privileges coming from a upwardly mobile professional community that in some ways is, you know, it often tries to play to sentiments of emulating, you know, whiteness and keeping that privilege in mind, but knowing I could be there for my Latin American friends, my Central American friends, my black friends in a certain way, balancing those identities, I think was very transformative.
Hello, you are currently listening to Hereabouts, Asian American Midwest Radio on WFHB in collaboration with Indiana University's Asian Culture Center. That was just Anushka Sen and Balavi Rao talking about commitments in their local communities through activism.
Part of it was also figuring out the people who didn't want to talk about their experiences, mm-hmm. which was another learning curve, because I remember, you know, I had friends who at that moment became more adamant about performing their identity, mm-hmm. whether, like, there was a couple of hijabi friends I have here, yeah. but there were also friends I had who were somewhat white passing,
yeah.
and they seriously considered whether, you know, they wanted to be marked as, yeah. as Muslim or Arab or mm-hmm. in the circumstances, because they'd lived through the 9/11 moment and they yeah. knew what that was like.
Yes.
So these were also very sensitive issues. And one question I kind of had for you was, there are so many images from that time that are kind of branded in my memory, just like
yes.
absurd, surreal, dark, all of that. Is there any off the top of your head that you'd like to share?
I mean, I remember right after the Muslim ban, Inaugurate the Revolution was one of the events that was organized by a variety of, you know, different groups in Bloomington. I think, you know, there was Bloomington Against Islamophobia, there was the Mother Hubbard's Cupboard, there was a bunch of different organizations that basically were like, look, all our activities are going to be affected by this. We are in solidarity with all our brothers and sisters who will be affected by what the Republicans are going to unleash into the country. So I felt like in some ways I was made aware of these many organizations, one of which was Students Against State Violence, SASV, that was on campus. And their politics is fairly radical left, which is, I tend to be very sympathetic to it, even if I don't always align with their political stances on things. But that was one avenue that I did get somewhat involved in. I remember soon after that, I think it was in April, some American Enterprise Institute local chapter invited a speaker called Charles Murray, who's
oh, yeah.
very famous pseudoscientist,
oh, yeah.
who has all sorts of dubious theories about racial IQ and things like that. And I remember that protest just being very charged. I turned up for it, and there were, you know, a lot of friends I have who are African-American are just generally not very much about wasting time talking about this stuff, but there were a lot of them who just turned up for that. And they had speakers playing Beyonce to drown out, you know, his speech inside. Some of the friends I had bought these tickets and not turned up so that, you know, the event would actually have empty chairs. There were people who tried to go in and ask difficult questions. So I remember there was a lot of different ways in which people were organizing. But yeah, I just remember a bunch of these students holding up a speaker to, like, I think it was Franklin Hall, where they just had this speaker pushed up against one of the windows and it was blasting formation. You know what I mean? And that was just like, okay, this is memorable,
yeah.
you know? And I felt like there was a certain, I think at that moment is when I realized sometimes that the university can seem very opaque if you're a grad student. You have all these people who become figureheads and who come and give these speeches in public, but they're never accessible. You don't know who to talk to or who to write to if you want to object to something happening on campus.
Right.
It's almost impossible to figure out, how do I register my voice? How do I make sure I'm heard? And then I have to like ask around, is somebody organizing something? Do you know who we can write to about this? Is there someone we can reach out to? The university is not built to be responsive to students' needs quite in the way that it often pitches itself to be, right?
Yeah.
And I felt like that was something that became very obvious to me. So yeah, so I feel like getting involved with student organizations who knew people, who could put you in touch with people if and when things arose, having a network of different groups working in their own spaces, but in touch with each other, I felt like was really inspiring to watch, because I think there was like an English grad coalition group. There was, you know, they were in touch with some of the other people with SASV. SASV was in touch with local sort of, you know, Bloomington groups as well. So there's all sorts of little networks that you can tap into when you want to talk to them. And I felt like that was a good resource to have. SASV, unfortunately, is no longer active.
Exactly.
So I'm kind of disappointed that kind
so
of disbanded.
So on that note, I can't help feeling, and correct me if, you know, you think that this is a false impression I've gathered, but I feel a lot of the energy and the kind of burning anger that we had in that first year,
mm-hmm.
just post-Trump, some of that energy has flagged,
mm-hmm.
and it's been hard to sustain that same vigor in student activism.
Yes.
And maybe just very, very recently with the farmers market, there's been
yeah.
a resurgence. So we can talk about that later.
Yeah.
Did you also feel that there was maybe some kind of dwindling? And what do you think was behind it? Do you think, again, it was because there were too many commitments that were dragging us in different
mm-hmm.
directions? Or was it something more than that?
It's that all of us are really a sort of floating population in Bloomington, and we're mainly here to get our degrees, right? We're mainly here to study and do our work and graduate and get those jobs. Inevitably, some of our energy for that kind of commitment flags when deadlines start looming. I feel inevitably many of the students that I was in touch with started dispersing in these ways just because they had very sort of student commitments that started catching up. So I feel like that was a part of it. And I certainly have kind of cut down on a lot of my appearances for a lot
of these events for that same reason. I started writing my dissertation and I was just like, oh God, I can't, you know, my attention just keeps getting pulled in these different directions. And it's so hard to come back to focus on writing after that. Like, I felt like it was becoming obvious if I went for a protest for the next
two... It messes with your head the whole day.
Like, 2 days before and 2 days after, all I'm doing is working around that, right? Like, who do I contact? Do we make sure the press is there? Do I need posters for this? What time do I get there, ahead of time or not? Can I advertise this even more on social media, right? Can I send this out to people in my department? Doing that kind of outreach really takes time, and it's a very different mental space. You can't just switch that off after a couple of hours and say, okay, now coming back to my dissertation chapter.
Right.
You know, it doesn't work that way. So I feel like the moment I started realizing that it was actually taking time away from when I could be writing, I really had to sort of resettle my priorities and kind of say, okay, here's what's important to me and here's what's not. And unfortunately, I don't have time for this week. I won't be able to contribute as much. So that's one of the reasons I feel like the energy is flagged. And I think it's because we're students. You know, if we were part of a wider community where we were permanently employed, we had a home, we were members of the suburban space or whatever, you feel like you can continue putting long-term energy into something, right? Whereas now it's like, this is short-term. I might be leaving Bloomington next year. So for me, I'm really kind of like weighing the needs and the kind of, you know, wants that I have to prioritize. And unfortunately, long-term change in Bloomington is not at the top of my list. You know, it's not the number one thing that I want in my life. So yeah.
No, and it's really sticky because it feels, for people who are politically committed, it feels very gross in some ways to think that we have to be resentful about the time we give to activism, because it's not great to look back and be bitter about the fact that, oh, my week went into this, because, you know, it's something that we should feel good about, right?
Yes.
But I think another part of the problem is that there's so much that keeps happening.
Yeah.
And it becomes, in the way that, again, politics works now, it becomes sometimes hard to feel that we are actually fighting for some kind of large-scale systemic overthrow.
Yeah.
Instead, it feels like there are 100 things going wrong and we're chasing every one of them. So then a kind of cynicism creeps in, saying, oh, well, surely there'll be something that'll happen next week, right? Maybe I'll turn up for that one. So it's a hard place to be. But, you know, I don't want to end on that note of bleakness, because I do think that, again, once activism is a part of you, it never entirely goes away.
Yeah.
So I think for those of us who feel like we're going through phases right now where we have to prioritize our academic work, perhaps, I think, going by my own experiences, and I'm guessing you might be in a similar position, you might have found ways of trying to make your presence on campus as useful as possible politically without necessarily giving the kind of intense time that the usual protest requires.
Yep.
Do you agree that you've tried to translate some of your politics into other fields?
Yes and no. I could probably be doing more. I have ideas on how I could be doing that. But primarily, I feel like I've come back to my department in some ways. I've been really trying to create a sense of community within the department, just because I feel like we know what's going on with our, you know, administration best. And if there are students with needs, whether it's financial, whether it's social support, I think all of those are little ways in which I want to contribute. Bringing conversations about what's happening with activism outside into the department, I think, is important as well. So I feel like that's something I do participate in. Sometimes I feel like the real reward for me in all of this is being able to sort of engage with the wider Bloomington community. And I feel like I've benefited from that, even if I'm not being able to give back as much. I feel like getting to know what it's like to be a part of Bloomington in the long term is something always that's valuable, right?
Okay.
I think activism is always a great inroad into community.
And I know that you've given some talks on, you know, caste and things like that, right? And I'm sure those have been moments that felt that there was some kind of exchange, something you could get across to the community. You want to share a little bit of that experience?
Yes, so the Indian Student Association, actually, and this is why I have a great soft spot for, you know, the Indian American community here, because I do feel like the Indian Americans I've met are actually very receptive to sort of, you know, being able to critique their own community in some ways that are meaningful to them. Many of them are grappling with, say, you know, what kind of baggage their parents have brought with them into the new country, right? And I feel like a lot of them are grappling with this, do I really have to fit this template, you know? And so they've actually invited me a couple of times. So in my second year here, I think, actually, I gave a talk on anti-blackness within the South Asian community. And it was a really good intersection for me about both race and caste, both of which I'm interested in my own work. And I just found it tremendously rewarding to be able to talk to students who are able to sort of understand their place within America as one that's very privileged. There was a lot of debates about assimilation and what it meant to assimilate into white society and whether that should be an acceptable ideal, right? Those kinds of questions were really rich and engaging. And then this year, I gave a talk on Valentine's Day about love, sex and romance in the Indian community. And it's like a cultural translator maybe, because for a lot of them, they didn't understand why their parents were a certain way. And I'm not even their parents' age. I feel like I'm grappling with my own parents half the time, but it felt like telling them, this is why your parents are like this, kind of felt very therapeutic for me. It was just a very, very weird, but very
engaging. Yeah, that sounds great. Thought. And I think it shows that some of the earlier alienation you felt, saying that, oh, well, here to do things like celebrate Holi and Diwali, and that's not what I'm there for.
Yeah.
But I think you found an inroad by tapping into their personal experiences, which were troubling for them. And then once you were able to do that, you were actually able to bring in the larger, you know, Indian cultural historical context.
Yeah.
And
that sounds delightful. And the messiness of race and caste and class and gender, right? Because it sometimes feels like we use these categories so, like, we have so much clarity when we say this, right? But clearly there's all these other issues within the community that are also problematic. How do you understand your own race better in context with other races, and where does that fit in with the racial politics of this country, right? And I feel that conversation is just always very rich and engaging when people bring a lot to the table and are willing to talk about it. And
and oddly enough, I've also been trying to cement more ties in my department.
Mm-hmm.
It's become important for me, I think, to be part of like little committees, mm-hmm. and to actually attend department events and to make sure that we are functioning as a sort of as unified as possible body of graduate students. I think that it's important to recognize myself as a worker and an employee of the university, because as much as I talk about my privilege, it's also important to know that I'm also caught up in the system, which, you know, if I'm a leftist and I'm interested in issues of labor and dignity of labor, then it is really important to recognize the way in which, you know, my labor feeds the university and the way I get treated and the way my kind of graduate student colleagues are also kind of embroiled in the whole thing. So cementing those ties and being more organized and committed towards our own development, I think, has also been important for me, and always the classroom, of course.
Yes, and sometimes, I mean, I'm in the media school, which is often has very professionalized degrees, so I'm very aware that we're churning out students like they're like it's a factory, right? We're producing skilled workers for the economy. That's really sometimes you're reminded of that in very uneasy ways in the classroom, right? Everyone's like, how do I get an A grade just so I can get into this organization or get this internship and so on? So I can't always take it as seriously as I'd like to, and as much as I'd like to think that my teaching is, you know, changing the world, then it probably is not.
Course isn't actually a substitute for organized action, but at the same time, I've always felt that there are ways of getting across to people in the classroom. If you're committed to having certain conversations, it's better than pretending that the classroom is there to just pick up certain technical skills.
Exactly.
So, you know, I've always had issues related to race since I've come here. I've really learned a lot in the process about the way race works in America that I hadn't before. You know, bell hooks has kind of been a bit of a touchstone for me. Mm-hmm. But interesting things happen. So the other day, and maybe, you know, this might be like a nice little note to end on, a bit of an opportunity for me to feel smug. But the other day, I was actually involved in helping the MSA, the Muslim Students Association, organize a protest on Kashmir and what the Indian current government has been doing, kind of solidifying the military occupation in Kashmir in ways that have been extremely sinister and dubious. And so the MSA really stepped in. They're wonderful when it comes to issues of, you know, Muslim population being affected over the world. And so there was a little article about in the IDS, and I didn't even popularize that on my social media or anything because I felt a bit weird about, like,
here is me being an activist.
It's not really, like, it is my battle, but it's also not,
it's,
you
a
know,
pretty grim situation as well, right? You don't want to make it a moment for your
for the spotlight in that sense. There really are Kashmiris who are struggling with situations so horrific I can't even imagine. But anyway, I have this student in my class. He's very bright and earnest. Like, he called America like a vigilante state within the first class. So
mission accomplished.
But, you know, I've at that point I had only about like not even two whole weeks with them. You know, I'd given them like a little moment to discuss something in group, and before we returned, he kind of just like came up and said that I read about what's going on in Kashmir and it's such a humanitarian crisis, anything I can do, other organizations I can get involved in. So it was just really nice that it was a moment that happened in the classroom, but it also happened because of something I did outside the classroom. So the way that the two kind of coalesced felt very fulfilling. And sometimes, you know, your students will surprise you if you take them seriously as thinking beings and sort of push their boundaries just a little bit. So it's this constant idea of like, what are we working with at a given moment? What is our bandwidth? What is our energy? And never to get too comfortable, I guess, with, oh, this is as much as I can achieve right now. I think it's always good to push ourselves, but to also know that, oh, these are the tools for me that feel like sharpest and most accessible at the moment. This is what I kind of want to work
with.
I agree. So
Yeah.
Thank you for that.
Yes, my pleasure.
It was a great conversation, and yeah, I hope to continue this even outside of the space. And thank you for listening.
Thank you very much for having me.
You've been listening to Hereabouts with the IU Asian Culture Center, broadcasted by WFHB in Bloomington. Our theme music is by Eternal Youth. Tune in to Hereabouts every Wednesday from 5 to 6 p.m.